We'll try to see whether we can wrap up some of the sugyas relating to Kriyashma today. So concerning the mitzvah of Kriyashma, there is a dimension of Kriyashma that may be unique to Kriyashma, and that's the notion of Kavana. Now, Kavana is not something new to the mitzvah of Kriyashma. Kavana is something that applies to all mitzvahs. It's actually a running machlekes in the Gemara, appears in the Sefer Shoshana, the Sefer Tzav, the Sefer Brachos, about whether mitzvahs Chichas Kavana, mitzvahs Eichas Kavana. Those are in my regular shiur, so hopefully tomorrow, from the Pesach shiur, we'll have to talk a little bit about Kavanah as it plays out in terms of Echilas Matzah, but there's a general question about if a person does a mitzvah for other kinds of reasons. Matzah the shiur, he blows the shofar because he likes the sound, or eats the matzah because someone's forced him to eat the matzah. He's not doing it to share mitzvah's matzah. Is he yotzi or is he not yotzi? So that machlokes, lechorah, should be identical for Kriyashma also. If a person is saying the words of Shema, because let's say probably would say he happens to be Mavis Sedra, Pasha's Vaschanim, he's Mavis Sedra, and Lombo, it turns out to be Zman Kriyashma. So if you hold the mitzvah Shichas Kavana, he would have to have Kavana L'Shem Mitzvah. If you hold mitzvah Ancho's Kavana, then he would still be into the mitzvah, even without explicit Kavana. So comes the Gemara Mesechas Brachas and has a whole discussion, it's an Amud long, about Kavana Kriyashma. And the Rashba on the spot tells us that would appear from the Gemara that there must be some other dimension of Kavana that's playing out of the sugya, because although the Gemara does address the general question of Kavana, the Gemara goes on a tangent discussing somehow some kind of what we call not a din kloli of Kavana, but almost like a din proti of Kavana, something that is unique to Kriyashma. And the Rashba develops a yisoy that there are really two kinds of Kavanas. There's Kavana latseis yedei ha-mitzvah, and as such, it's not any different than any other mitzvah. Kavana latseis yedei shofi, yedei matzi, yedei lulav kitch, whatever the mitzvah is. But in addition to Kavana Lotzeis, which may or may not be needed, there is an additional level of Kavana that everybody agrees to, and that is Kavanas Ha'inyan, says the Rashba. To be aware, to understand, to be focusing and concentrating on the words that you're saying. So it is not enough by Kriyashma to just have in mind, right before I say Shema, the Shema mitzvah Kriyashma finished, and then say the words of Shema and be dreaming. That's no good, says the Rashba. You have to have in mind Kavanas Tzapeirish HaMilas, the Milam, you have to have in mind Kavanas Mechushanayim, you have to be focusing on what you're saying. That additional level of Kavana is a Dimin HaTeir, says the Rashba, and it's Ma'akev, even Midaraisa. Not everyone agrees to this Rashba, the Mishnah does quote Allah HaLachan HaKos Kriyashma, so we're going to follow, we follow the Shittas of Rashba, that the Kavanas HaInyan, Kavanas Mechushanayim is Ma'akev. How much of Shema do you have to be paying attention to? So this is the Machlokes of the Gemara, and most of the Rishonim pass in the first pasuk. Well, maybe Baruch Shem is added on the Rabban. Baruch Shem is not min HaTorah, it's added in the Rabban to say Baruch Shem. But the first pasuk of Kriyashma requires Kavana Midaraisa. So if a person is saying Shema Yisrael, thinking about the ball game, so then he wouldn't be Yotze even min HaTorah. After Shema, after Baruch Shem, if a person gets distracted, as long as he said the words, and so then technically he would still fulfill the mitzvah. He's having in mind the Shem mitzvah, it's just that he's not concentrating on the Perisha Inyan. So that would only pose a problem, Mikra Din, in the first pasuk of Shema, or an extension of the Baruch Shem. So Kavana, in terms of the regular Din of Kavana, in addition to the special, unique Din of Kavana. So Eli, you had a question?
Yeah. How much you have to have Kavana for, depend on how much you hold as Dil Raisa?
So that's a good question. So Pasha's not that way. The Pasha Pshat in Aloch is that even if you hold the first Pasha, there are Raisa, some help two Pashas, some say three Pashas. But the din of Kavana only applies to the first pasuk, which is a little bit difficult to understand. How did Chazal know to make that distinction? So if you look at the Gemara sounds like the ma'or for the din of Kavana, this din prat, this din mechudesh of Kavana, is derived from the phrase alav avecha. So if that's the case, so then the Gemara presents that one opinion says you have to have Kavana until alav avecha. But we don't even pass it that way. We pass it that Kavana is really only the first pasuk. So then how does alav avecha teach you about the first pasuk? So the Pashup Shah is that we hold that the source for Kavana by Kriyashma, the Din Prati by Kriyashma, is not derived from Alav Avecha. It's rather learned from the word Shema. Shema is a Lashon Havana. The word Shema means to listen with your ears. It also means to understand with your lay. It says that the Hemlo Yaduki Shomei Yosei, Kebalitz Ben Asam. The brothers didn't know that Yosef understood what they were saying. Shomei doesn't mean to hear. They have perfectly good hearing. Elo Shomei Yosei means to understand. And so Pashup Shad is that we hold that the word Shema Yisrael means understand Klal Yisrael, pay attention Klal Yisrael, to what? Hashem Ken Hashem Echad. If you say that Pashup, then Mikra, then you can doze off a little bit as long as you say the words. There is an entire sugya in the third parak of Maseches Brachas that appears in Shulchan Aruch Mishnebura in Ilchus Kriyashma, which is not a Kriyashma per se sugya. It's really a more Dvar Mishnebura Kedusha Dika sugya in the sense of it applies to other brachas, it applies to tefillah, it applies to the Divrei Torah. Anytime a Kadosh Baruch Hu's name is mentioned in any shape or form, either literally explicitly mentioned or through Derech Pesukim is mentioned, even if the Shem Hashem per se is not said, any Divrei Torah, the Shem Hashem Echo, all Divrei Torah considered to be an extension of the Shem Hashem. Anytime there's a recitation of the Shem Hashem, there are a whole series of different halachas that govern that recitation, and they make up a good chunk of the sugyas of the third pech of Maseches Brachas, and after the third pech of Maseches Brachas. Those are the dinim of Erva, that a person is not permitted to say Kriyashma, Mazon, Brachas, Benching, Limit Torah. You're not allowed to do all of those things in the presence of Erva, in the presence of something that halachically is supposed to be covered. And in addition, one is not supposed to be involved in those kinds of things in the presence of Tzoan, the presence of something bad smelling type of an item, either Tzoan or Lime, other kinds of things. So we'll try to give a little bit of an overview of these halachas as they play out, important areas of halacha that, again, that in Shulchan Aruch appear in Ilchus Kriyashma, but really are not unique to Kriyashma per se.
Rabbi?
Yeah.
For the Kavana, if someone doesn't have Kavana for the first pasuk, they have to repeat it?
Yeah, they have to repeat it. Yeah, now the Gemara says that you're not supposed to play a game out of this. You're not supposed to, the Gemara says you're not supposed to play Chavrusa with Rav Shalom. You just say Shema, then, let me say it again. Supposed to really, really try, and if you really, really goofed, and you really, truly, I don't want everyone to get nervous about this, but if you really, truly were not concentrating at all, they should wait a few seconds. It shouldn't be Omer Shema, Shema, Mishaskin or so. You wait a few seconds, then you say the Pasuk Kriyashma. So the first din we'll talk a little bit about is the din of Kriyashma, another Barachas and Tefillah and Tamatara in the presence of Erva. What is the source of this din? This is a din in HaTorah. The Gemara derives this from the phrase, L'yir B'cha Erva's Dovar. These are a series of psukim and parashas kiseitze about when the Jews go out to battle. They have to be very, very careful that the camp remains clean. The kids go to the bathroom in the middle of the camp. And then the Torah says that the camp has to be physically clean. You can't have tzoa, things there. And also, v'lo yireh b'cha erbes dover. Kadosh Baruch Hu shouldn't see any erbes dover. Di avishal miyach arecha. And if he sees erbes dover, he'll return away from you. So the Gemara tells us, Tashma Peh explains to us that this phrase not only refers to Shasa Mochama, it refers to whenever Kadosh Baruch Hu is with you. Because the Torah says, the Torah says that your machna has to be Kaddish. So part of being Kaddish is that it has to be clear of Arayas. So anytime when a Kadosh Baruch Hu is in your presence, a Kadosh Baruch Hu is present at the time of Mochama, he accompanies the Jewish soldiers out to battle. The Kadosh Baruch Hu is present in Ashuls, the Kadosh Baruch Hu is present. In the Bismedish, because Baruch is present when I'm saying a shir, because Baruch is present when I'm making a bracha. Ki Hashem l'kech v'salech v'kech v'vechanecha, v'hai mechanecha kodosh, lo yir v'cha erbez dover. If you go to visit the Nachal Charedi, there's a big sign to the camp, it says, v'hai mechanecha kodosh. So they take that, the Baruch Hashem take it very, very seriously. I remember years ago, we went to visit with some members of my family to go visit the Nachal Charedi group. So they told us that the girls are not allowed into Nachal Charedi. Daughter, I think at the time was maybe 5 years old, said that no girls except for, I think wives in very, very limited times, places perhaps, are allowed to come to Nachal Charedi. Otherwise, no females are permitted into the camp. So Mamash, as it says in the front, B'hai b'chanecha kodesh. So what the din is that L'yir b'chanecha is dov, you're not allowed to say Shema, Tefillah, Brachas, except in the presence of Arachas. What's considered to be an erva for these purposes? The Gemara tells us that erva means, on the one hand, kipshuto, means the person is mamash undressed. Whether I'm undressed or whether the person in front of me is undressed, it doesn't make a difference whether it's a man or whether it's a woman. But just the fact that the makama erva is magula, that is a problem. That is an issa deraisa to say divrei Torah in front of a makama erva that is magula. Makam erva obviously means literally mamish mamish particular makam erva. Then the Gemara tells us in brachas that there are a whole other series of halachas that are also treated in halacha like the makam erva, so even though they're not mamish particular makam erva, but for these purposes they are treated like erva. For these purposes they have to also be covered. That's why there are din matznias that govern these places, particularly in a woman's body. Certain parts have to be covered because also matznias dictates that all the objective and all the subjective and all the quasi-halachic erva parts have to be covered. And in addition to the regular rules of tzvinius that require these places to be covered, one has to be careful not to say dvarim, shalom, kedusha, brachim, etc. in the presence of these places. What constitutes these kinds of parts, or parts of a woman's body? What's considered to be mekomos of these quasi-erva for these halachas? So the Gemara, the third book of brachas, gives a whole series of halachas. One of them, the Gemara speaks about a shok b'isha erva. part of the woman's leg is considered to be a makom erba for these purposes. There is a machlokes in the Gedolei HaPoskim, what exactly, which part of the body is exactly the shok. There's actually a machlokes in the Mishnah Berurah and the Chazon Ish. Mishnah Berurah thought that the shok is from the knee above, we call the thigh area, that's the shok. But the calf underneath the knee, the Mishnah Berurah said, is not what Chazal were referring to. And the Chazon Ish disagreed, Chazon Raya's, Mishnayas, that the word shok in Halacha does not mean the thigh, it actually means the lower part, beneath the knee. Underneath that part has to be covered as well. Again, that's an afkamina, both in terms of Vichus Krishna as well as in terms of general guidelines at Tznius. So everybody agrees that the knee and above have to be covered for the purpose of Vichus Tznius. Whether or not that requires that beneath the knee has to be covered, that's a subject to this machlokes Gedolei HaPoskim.
But for our purposes, what's the source for general Tznius? Meaning, Vayamach HaKadosh Kodesh is for Tfilah.
Right, I mean, how do you know that a person has to be in the state of Tznius? So that's number one, it's there are dinim that a man is not permitted to look at parts of a woman's body. So those are dinim losa surach re'el avavchem, those are dinim of mishpat and the kol davara, those are dinim that the Gemara learns that whole series of psukim. So it's understood that the woman has to dress herself in such a way that she's not going to lead people to be nichshol in those yisurim. So that's definitely part of the picture. So then one could argue even just independently that if it's a mokam erva, so the Torah is assuming that a mokam erva is supposed to be chasas, is erva saviyam, erva saviyam lo ro, that erva is some by definition that it's supposed to be covered. The Torah speaks about the isha sota, that a forest rosh isha, that's considered to be a terrible bizoyan to uncover the woman's hair, because the hair is considered to be also mokam erva. You see that the Torah says that it has to be mechusas. Rashi learns that there's an issa deraisa for a woman, either an issa resi, a salah, whatever it is, for a married woman to have her hair uncovered in public, because the Torah says that you uncover the sotah's hair, implying that a regular married woman is supposed to have her hair covered. So if her hair is supposed to be covered, which is a makom erva, all the makomim are ever supposed to be covered. So if a person wants to say Kriya Shma in front of this area, that would be a pose a very, very serious problem. In addition to that, Gemara also speaks about the seir, we just mentioned it, seir v'isha erva, that we assume that refers to only to the hair of a married woman. So a married woman's hair is not permitted to be uncovered, and therefore one is required to not say, one would not be permitted to say Kriya Shma in the presence of a woman's hair, which is uncovered as well. We'll talk about it in a moment, whether that din applies to the full extent of Zman Hazeh, whether the issur of saying Kriya Shma in front of a married woman's hair uncovered may have a certain limitation to the Zman Hazeh, we'll see in a moment. And the Gemara speaks that other parts of the woman's body that cannot be exposed, b'shas Kriya Shma. So, for example, kol b'isha erva. So the Gemara says that a woman's voice, a woman is singing, so then one's not supposed to be saying divrei Torah, etc. A woman should not be singing in the first place. The man should not be listening to the woman singing. Listening to a woman singing kol b'isha is a violation of exposing yourself to erva. One's not allowed to do that. So the woman is not supposed to be singing. So in addition to the yisr of the woman singing, in addition to the yisr of listening to the woman singing, there's an additional prohibition. One should not be saying words of the Torah when the woman is singing as well. Then the Gemara says that there's a general rule of tefach b'isha erva. That means any part of the body that usually is covered, even though it's not absolutely halachically in erva, but if that particular location people generally tend to cover, that's what the post can write. Let's say the ikra din. So a woman's allowed to uncover from her elbows down. Mishnah says in Ksubis that a woman is not allowed to be Megalas Ro Seba Shuk. She's not allowed to go with short sleeves. She's not allowed to go with the elbows, above her elbows, uncovered. That's what we generally assume halacha. If she wants to go with beneath her elbows uncovered, that's okay. So if you would live in a place where all the women wear long sleeves all the time, and nobody exposes the bottom part of their arm, so that would be what's called Tefach B'isha Erva. So even though it's not objectively an erva, it's subjectively an erva. Let's say you live in a place that all the women cover their faces, so then that would also constitute a tefach b'isha erva as well. So there are certain objective mekaymish ha'ishish that are erva. So yerach is a shok, so shok is an erva, nikol is an erva, and seir married woman is an erva, mokum erva, mamish is an erva. And you have other places that are totally lefi minig ha'mokum. So the din is that one is not supposed to say kriya shma and brachas, etc. in any of these places. Whatever should be covered, and one should not be saying kriya shma in these places.
If you're from a place that usually, women don't cover, let's say, their face, you go to a place where they do cover their face, is that become an erva?
It depends on what the minhag ha'makom of that place is. If women in that area do not cover their faces, then one would be permitted. And if you come from a place where they do cover their faces, I don't know. I'm not sure.
And the upper arm is objective?
No, the upper door pasha is Ro'el Seha. The Gemara says, in Masechet Tubas, the Mishnah says that a woman's not allowed to be Megala Ro'el Seha Bachutz. So Zeroa, we assume, the Abroma, you put a tefillin on your Zeroa. So Zeroa means above the elbow. That's considered to be the Zeroa. So that's usually assumed that upper part of the arm is considered to be is considered to be a part that's supposed to be objectively covered. There is a big machlekes, most probably in the Rishonim, definitely in the later poskim, as to how to understand all of these halachas. On the one hand, we find that there's a prohibition of saying these words in front of erva mamish, literally osa mamish, bein a man, bein a woman. And then you have all these other things that are kind of like thrown on for good luck. Shok bisherva, kol bisherva, se bisherva, every day. The question is, what's the nature of all these halachas? So one could argue that the nature of these halachas are, is that these are also called erva. It means the Torah says, lebucha erva is dava, and the halacha has certain definitions of what erva means. There are objective and subjective definitions of erva, but these are all included in the same parsha of lebucha erva is dava. Well, maybe one could argue, that the real issue of erva is dava, as described in the Chumash, is really referring to erva mamish. It means you're not allowed to say krishma when your mom is standing there completely undressed, or the person in front of you is completely undressed, man and man and woman. What these dinim are, these are chashashas of hiror, namely that in addition to the absolute outright isser of saying krishma, literally facing a makom erva, to say krishma, to say brachas and tefillah and learn in a situation where the person is in a state of hiror of divrei aveira, that in and of itself was a problem. And all Chazal meant is that if you're saying Krishma and the shunk is exposed, and the hair is exposed, and the voice is exposed, and everything's exposed, so those would be chashashos of hearer. So it's not mamish erva. It's not that the Gemara meant to equate all these things with erva mamish. The Gemara just meant that these things are revealing the hearer, and therefore it would be also to say Krishma, say brachas, learning in the presence of these kinds of things. Might not come in on it's tremendous stuff coming on the would these dinim apply for one woman to another woman? So let's say, for example, if one woman is standing, mamish, the makom erva is exposed, so then even another woman couldn't say krishma. Even she herself can't say krishma. You can't say, if there's an erva exposed, that's in a sick government, a third doesn't say krishma. Say brachas tefillah, etc. But what if Racha wants to say krishma, and Leah doesn't have a hiccup? Racha wants to say a bracha, and Leah is singing. Racha wants to say a bracha, and Leah has a tefillah she erva exposed. Would that be a problem? Would we say that these are mamish arayas, and these are mamish erva, and therefore the issur would apply for a man and a woman? I say, no. These are not issurim of erva mamish. This is just simply mekaymus of hiror. And mekaymus of hiror said, well, one woman is having a haharis from another woman, so that wouldn't pose a problem. So that's a big machlekes rishayim. So is these dinim of erva, these dinim of hiror? There should be another big, big, huge nafkamina ladina as follows. The Shulchan Aruch actually quotes a tremendous kula from some Rishonim that let's say a person is mamish in front of erva mamish, all you have to do is close your eyes. If you close your eyes, then you continue, then that's not called erva's dava shabbat chorecha, that's not called in front of the erva. So we don't follow that. Mishavura writes that all the other posts will disagree and say, no, that doesn't work. You have to mamish turn around, turn your back, you have to make a just to close your eyes doesn't do the trick. So come the Acharon, the Shabur already quotes a big machlekes apost. What's the din? Not of erva mamish. What if it's just these other kinds of things? The hair uncovered, the shofish erva, devilish, those kinds of things. Would closing your eyes help? So the Shabur quotes some Acharon would say yes, and some say no. What's the nekudas of machlekes? Very partial, very simple machlekes. That if you hold that these are mamish objective erva, so the same way that we reject the Shulchan Aruch and say closing your eyes doesn't help for real erva, closing your eyes not going to help for these things either. But if you hold that these are not real erva, it's b'chol not erva. It's just a chashash of hiror. So if my eyes are closed, I won't look at that. So if I look down, I can't see it. Turn around. So I'm not seeing it. So my eyes are closed. There wouldn't be a chashash of hiror. So that's a big machlok. That's a very, very, potentially very loaded nafkamina b'zman hazeh. So I think that mikra did one has a right to be makel on the shayla, that these kinds of isurim are really more hiror oriented than erva mamish oriented. And therefore, closing one's eyes and looking down, looking to the side, would be very helpful. Again, nice b'chol yom. You find yourself, you're sitting at a Shabbos table with someone and somebody not dressed 100% appropriately. You want to bench someone's not dressed appropriately. You're saying a shiur, someone's not dressed. So according to the one group of Acharonim, your mamish stuck. You have to stop. But if you have a good bracha on him, all you have to do is just not look at the person, just close your eyes, or something like that, practically close your eyes, look down, look inside a little bit. As long as you're not looking at the inappropriate image at that moment, so be'ikra, then that would be okay, because it's just an isra of hero. If the hero doesn't exist, then lemaisa, it doesn't exist. I think one has a right to be made like this. L'chayit is a very, very good raya for the Nekila, that's a Mishnah, Masechet Challah. Mishnah discusses a woman who is being mafresh chala, and she's mamish not dressed. She's sitting on the floor, and her makom erva is mechusa, like with the floor. The floor is almost like covering over the makom erva. So the Mishnah says that she could technically be mafresh chala with the bracha, because her erva is not exposed. If she's standing up and the makom erva is mafresh exposed, so then tough, but you can't make a bracha. But if she's sitting in such a way that the floor, the ground itself, is in a sense covering over the makom erva, so the Mishnah says that isha ruva kotza chala mevarecha, so she can recite a bracha. Wait a second. All the Mishnah says is that her makom erva is covered. It doesn't say her legs are covered. It doesn't say her hair is covered. It doesn't say the rest of her body is covered. It sounds to the Mishnah that she's totally undressed. And as long as the makom erva mamash is covered, it's okay. But wait a second. What happened to the other dinim? So the answer is the other dinim don't apply to her. The other dinim are just the day they're not makom erva. If the hair would be mamash and erva, then the woman couldn't dab with her own hair uncovered. So al karachach, the word is that these dinim are not really dinim of erva, these are dinim of hiror, and the dinim of hiror, therefore, the chashash hiror doesn't apply. So that's similar to what the Aruch HaShulchan, the very famous kula of the Aruch HaShulchan, it's a controversial kula, but the Aruch HaShulchan claim that the isser of saying Kriyishma in front of a married woman's hair uncovered may not apply to Zman Hazeh. The Aruch HaShulchan is sometimes grossly misquoted. Some people say that the Aruch HaShulchan sanctioned women not covering the hair. The Aruch HaShulchan says such a thing. The Aruch HaShulchan writes explicitly that's a terrible, terrible thing, that there are some women who are not covering their hair. Some married women already in Europe. People think that the problem started in America, predated America. So the Aruch HaShulchan writes that there are women in Nebuchadnezzar's communities who are not covering the hair properly. And he says it's a terrible, terrible pirtza. But since it's so nafut, since it's so common, therefore he thinks the isser of saying Kriyishma wouldn't apply. Why? He writes, because the whole isser is only al-tiror, and if I see it all the time, I don't get any hair anymore from the hair. But therefore, the Aruch HaShulchan writes, he thinks that the Issa wouldn't apply. Again, whether we follow that or don't follow that, that's a loaded question. But the idea of the Aruch HaShulchan is very similar to what we're saying. The idea is that these quasi kind of erva are not objective erva. They're more of a subjective, not subjective in the sense of that they don't always apply. They do apply, but they're not outright makom erva. They're more of a derech hirur. And therefore, we could somehow solve the hirur problem. We can solve the problem directly. And the ways to solve the problem are closing the eyes, turning away a little bit, etc. This would probably also depend, upon how old does a girl have to be for this issa to kick in. The Mishabur actually is very machbar. The Mishabur writes that 3 years old already. So once the girl is a Ru'i Labia, so then it's considered to be Mokam Erva. She would have to be dressed appropriately, totally appropriately. And others say that even if she's a little bit older than 3, so if she walks to the shul with her short sleeves, it's not the end of the world. She walks to the shul, if she doesn't have her knees covered, it's not the end of the world. Because as long as she's so young that nobody, no normal person would be Bahari yet from her, so then that's not considered to be included in this issue. So again, those Achron, Chazanish, others will make against the Mishnebura, but working with a little bit of a different mindset as to what the nature of this issue is all about. So again, we just really touched the Rashi Prakim in terms of this din of Erva. We didn't even get anywhere near the din of Tzoa. We didn't get to some of the din of Kerry, which are part of this, the end of the story as well. So we still have hopefully a little bit more to do. So Miyat Hashem, the Sufikas will be our break till after Pesach. So Miyat Hashem, after Yom Tov, so I think the last day Yom Tov is a Thursday, so I guess the following week. So Miyat Hashem will remind me, we'll try the final touches on the Krishna story, and then we'll try to hit the gas for Chas Tefillah. Maybe we have to try to finish up the Tefillah in a couple of weeks as well, and then we'll hopefully try to finish up the official syllabus of this series of Shiurim. Okay?